Tom Hoffman. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 5th, 1974. This meeting is very interesting. Let's just ask how I'm doing, and you're a nervous wreck before you get ready. Golly, I almost spend the whole week just trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to say. But tonight, I have two inventory Gitchers that have been in my drawer at home for a while, and I felt they were kind of interesting to the one in particular has some monk. Okay, that's all right.
People's birthday for today.
Oh,
who I haven't called yet.
Anyhow. The particular one I want to look at is the one that has a little chart on the back, and that's the one you have. I'll mention this other one later, but there was some neat stuff on the front page of it. What's the purpose of the 12 steps? Hell, I never knew what they were, but to help us discover and establish a conscious relationship with a power greater than ourselves. And down the line, from the foreword of the first edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered in the main purpose of this, is the main purpose of this book. What I found interesting to me is usually I take something like this home and skirt over it, and then it sets for months. Well, this one's had for years. And as I looked at it, you need to really look deep into the darn thing, because they used a big book to put this together. It wasn't just some guy telling his experiences. They used a big book, and they told you what page they quoted from. So it's a little bit more than just a lead from AA, as far as I was concerned. And it's a tremendous help for me tonight. It might be a little bit shorter on me than usual, because this is a tough subject. Not this one so much as that one. What the hell am I doing? I think I started this.
You had a drink of
water. Now I got two, huh? They start on the second page. Right away, I think it's the second. Yeah, there it is. Telling you what to do and how to do it. First of all, they're telling you to make sure you took steps 1, 2, 3. And you got them in, and you're doing good. You don't need to know about those forms. We'll go through them as we go along. But then it's telling you in number 4 to read page 58 through 63. And it tells you right up to the last paragraph. And it says, note each place you see the word self and selves and the compounds of those words. And I thought, what the hell are they trying to tell me? So it goes through that area, and there's no real reason except when they get into the questions here. Then that all sorts to fit together. This thing has 4 things it's directed at. As you see, resentments, fears, sex conduct, and harms to others. After you've done that first part, now they want you to read page, where the hell is it? 63 through 71. And that's going to go into some of the other parts of this form. So all of that really kind of intrigued me. This thing, which is in the same drawer for quite a while, is a series of 156 questions. And I had somebody do this. Well, I thought he was nuts. But he did it and wanted to do it. But It does tell you to prepare for a long talk with your sponsor. I can't, your internet connection is unstable, what'd I do?
Nothing, it's okay. That happens. Just so it's not the speaker.
And number 10 here says, in our four-step inventory, we're searching for grosser handicaps. Personal inventories will become part of a lifelong process. Later in our 10-step inventories, our objectives are not only to keep our house clean and in order, correcting mistakes and errors when they occur, and so on. So it's kind of telling us that if you get the house clean enough when you start, why, it'll clean itself almost as you go through the 10 steps and the other steps. They recommend that you do this with a sponsor. Or, a sponsor is what I think they should be talking about. Somewhere in there they talk about a wife. And some of these questions I wouldn't ask my wife. But they do recommend that you do it with your sponsor. And then I say to myself, well, you're commingling the fifth and sixth step, or fourth or fifth step here, which is fine. You might have a better result doing it that way. Because the inventory itself that they have put into this thing is broken down, I think it's about the fourth page, the fourth step and resentment. And again, up on the top, it tells you where to look in the big book for what they're talking about. It's all in the fifth chapter, really, but it's column 1 is on page 64, column 2 is on page 64, 3 is on 65, and so on. And they're encouraging you, when you use this thing, to go from the top to the bottom, one column at a time, not to go across. And that didn't make much sense to me at first, but after I thought about it, I thought, gee, if you get all your resentments down, and there's things that are similar, when you come to why am I angry, you'll have a different perspective on one or two of them by the time you go through it all, I think. I could be entirely wrong. Resentment thing asks you to list the names of the people in institutions or principals with whom you were angry. And why am I angry? So after you do the first column, you do the second column and answer that question. Then in the third column, this particular one on resentments is saying what part of self was hurt in or threatened. And there comes that self. And it's going to pop up here quite a bit. I don't know. I looked at it, and it's talking about self-esteem, pride, emotional security, pocketbook, ambitions, and so on. I don't know whether that would be something I just check as I went through this, or if over on the side I'd rate it from 1 to 10. That would be something I'd like to think about before I went into this thing. But then the last column over is asking, where was I to blame? And that really kind of answers the question, if you can get that far. The next page regards fears. And it again starts out telling you to read page 67 through 68 of the big book beginning. Anyhow, again, column 1 is on page 68, 2 is 68, 3 is 68, 4 are they, well, I don't know what they say. But with fear, it's again the same thing. Straight down, not across, and you list the names of people, institution, principles, or anything else that you fear. And next column over, page 68, why am I afraid? Next column over, which part of self have I been relying on which has failed me? again, self. Self-reliance, self-confidence, self-discipline, self-will. And then, what part of self does the fear affect? So these get pretty heavy, I think. Because you really have to think about it. It's not something you're just going to skip through. The interesting one to me is the next one, the sex conduct. I don't know where the hell I'd put this if I took it and left it at home. I'd have to stuff it between the mattress or something, I think. But that's a real touchy area for a lot of people, in particular women. Women have, at least as I've seen over the years, have done some tough stuff that we guys just kind of dismiss. But a lady coming into Alcoholics Anonymous needs a lot of fortitude, I think. When I first come in, a friend of mine I went to school with came in March after I came in. She and I developed a friendship that couldn't be broken. It was wonderful. Her sponsor, when she came in, her sponsor knew exactly what she was up to, and what she had been, what she had done. And the first rule that she received was no men for a year. Not at all. No men. That meant go to a meeting and have a cup of coffee maybe afterwards, but no date at the movies or anything else. She was to focus completely on her sobriety. And sex was a big thing for her. We built up a tremendous friendship. We almost sponsored each other for that first year. Because I would call her, or she would call me, and really talk things over, talk deep. And it's why I sometimes wonder why you shouldn't be using a woman for a sponsor for a man, or a man for a sponsor for a woman. There's a lot of validity to doing that, but the way she and I conducted ourselves, why we both grew very, very, very much, because we both had the same issues, similar issues. I at that time was separated from my wife. She was divorced, so the opportunity was there. But we knew between the two of us that that wasn't going to happen. And it was great to have that confidence in yourself that it wasn't going to happen. Neither one of us would concede to that. So to me, it was a very, very important thing. And it turned out to be that way, because it gave both of us the time to share with each other this or that, or this or that, and be perfectly frank about everything we discussed. Most often, she and I would end up our conversation by, let's put it on the shelf and wait till tomorrow. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Because some of the stuff got tough. But that's part of the game here. And if you've got enough faith in yourself, and faith in the way you handle those first three steps, this won't be a breeze, but at least you'll have the confidence to do it. The last one is people we've harmed. And of course that, again, is in the book. It gave me a great deal of confidence to know that they pulled something out of the book and just didn't pull it out of the air. Page 70, page 58 to 63, no, two times after, using their who did I harm and what did I do or fail to do, and then the breakdown, which part of self caused the harm. again, we popped up into self, that I couldn't figure out what it was. And what's the nature of my wrongs? And what should I have done? For my nickel, this will take a long time for somebody to do, if they're going to do it religiously. And as it says in here, they should be doing it after the first three steps and having a good grasp on it. The other thing it'll say is take it with a sponsor. And they've defined a sponsor as someone who has a year of sobriety and 12 months, or 12, knows the 12 steps, not 12 months. That made a lot of sense to me. There was times when folks would come in with 6 months and say, well, I can sponsor somebody, and you don't really know what the hell's going on. You don't know I'm for 3-4 years. Well, no, push it. At least I didn't, because new revelations came up about quite often. I did my fourth step, ages and ages ago. And as I looked at this thing, when I approached it, way back when I approached the program and the fourth step, it tells me that I should be looking real hard at 1, 2, and 3. And those are all God-filled things, if you want to call it that. But my faith was pretty strong all the way through things. So I really wasn't too concerned about my faith. I was concerned about resentments and all that other stuff. I had a fellow that was a sponsor for me when I first came in. I think a few of you heard me say that I got him through the answering service, which is still a miraculous thing, and it's run by the city's AA group. But I called, and like any other answering service, they plugged me right into Bob. And the next day I was sitting in front of him on a couch. He asked me to stay sober for the night, and I said I would, and I did. And he was sometimes a crotchety old guy, but very forward. At that point, things were rocky at home, but I was pretty much determined to get this thing. So I talked to Bob every day. And it was always something that had to do with what was going on in my life. And as I look back now, my wife and I are back together. It's 57 years now, so it's all in one package now. But what the hell was I heading to something? Jesus, I hate that. Well, anyhow, I know what it was. I would talk to Bob at night and then be as loud as I could when I was dealing with something about her. Thoroughly convinced she heard it and digested it, and that's so what? But as I look back now, that was a tad of foolishness, little self stuff in there that I didn't really need. Shortly after my first meeting with Bob, and Bob was a unique, he was from the old school. He had 30 some years when I entered, so he had a lot in his gizzard, I guess. But those guys back in those days ran you out of town for a meeting so they could talk to you all day. So our first meeting was in Edinburgh, and the second meeting was in Wattsburg or Waterford. But that was his intent, was to take me out and have a nice discussion on the way, stop at wherever and have a cup of coffee and a piece of pie afterwards, and go home. So it was a very gentle and yet sturdy conversation between the two of us. Didn't take me long after that to develop a liking to another sponsor. My mother-in-law finally revealed to me that she knows of my condition. So she said, would you mind having Jack come talk to me? I didn't know Jack from a hill of beans, but he did pick me up and took me down to the 512, the Wednesday night meeting, Young at Heart. And that's been my home group for a bunch of years. But Jack was kind of more my age, and we had more freedom to get together. He had a boat, and we'd go out on that, and a bunch of guys from the club, and a bunch of guys from AA that had some time in with had boats, and we would take them, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them out to Beach 11. Gene Acree would have got some steaks for us, and we'd cook steaks, and somebody bring macaroni salad, and just have a very, very peaceful night. Nothing but Alkies, talking this and that. And then as the night went on, Jack and I went to his boat, and the other guys went to theirs, and we sat up more and talked more. But that's the part of the program that I really enjoy and really relish, because I was growing at that period. Jack convinced me that St. Vincent's was the drug and alcohol ward to our north, it was called. And Jack and the guys and some of the gals spoke there every 10th night at 6 o'clock for an hour. And we just went in and revealed some of our issues and encouraged them to talk with us if they felt it. But that was kind of my introduction to speaking to people and to dealing with the program, in addition to having Jack around. As time went on, I developed a friendship with one of the guys from Serenity West. Back then, Serenity West was the program you got into after you got out of Tour North. And it's kind of the way God works in your life, whether you like it or not. We met and became reasonably decent friends, and when things came crashing down at home, I moved in with him. And we had a very, very fruitful relationship. He had his ups and downs in the program. I stayed level, thank God. But at that same time, there was a whole bunch of people that came in about the same time, as there probably is with you folks. There's a core around you that fills you in. Well, we just got together and had a hell of a good time. Not doing anything particular. One of them had a cottage down on Ferncliff. We'd take those boats over there and bring a hamburger, and then we'd come over to our house on a day. I can distinctly remember baking a turkey of all the damn things I remember. But we did, for the bunch of us, and had a lot of fun doing it. In my years, my job had changed quite a bit, and I was out traveling on the road. Now, I'm getting off. See, I told you I'd get off on a lead, didn't I? That's not what I want to do. I really don't. Let's skip to the fifth step. This is going to be short, I can tell. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. What I thought to bring up at this point was how a few of my fourth and fifth steps came to me. The one was a gentleman my age, still thrashing about the world, but sober as a judge. And this was while I was with Jim. We got together quite often on his boat and talked pretty heavy, deep stuff. And he came into the kitchen one day with a piece of paper in his hand, and he said, "This is bothering me." We sat for hours. To me, that was a fifth step. maybe not to the directions you're getting here, but we created a friendship and a trusting relationship, and that to me was the important part, was he was able to trust me, I was able to trust him. Not so much the friendship, it's the trust. So that was just kind of conversation. The other one was a young man, that other paper I had hung, held up there, 156 questions. And you know, to me, as I went and looked at these damn things, I thought it's kind of like the big book. You just open a page and there's something there that you read. And it's great, no matter what you read. It's wonderful. But there's 156 questions in this thing. Now, God love Joe. He didn't want to go back to jail, is what he didn't want to do. But we got as far as the fourth step, and he took this paper and legal pads, page after page of legal pads, wrote out the question, wrote out his response, went all the way through all those 156 questions, did it over again. So he came to me with two copies. God love him. But it aired out what he felt he needed to air out, and that was the importance of it. And he didn't return to jail. So that was his big thing. I don't know really where to go beyond this, outside of the fact, to me it's a great honor to have someone have that much faith in you to pour his guts out, or her guts out, either one. It takes a real trusting individual to do that, I think. Oh, I know. It takes a lot of trust on his part and a lot of trust on your part. But if it's done properly, and if that individual has done steps 1, 2, and 3 properly, you're off to a good start. That a sponsor can look at for review. I don't know how sponsorship goes too much today. Back, way back when, Bob took me to my first meeting at Edinburgh, down in the basement out there. And before I could take a deep breath, he stood up and announced that I want to introduce Tom as an alcoholic. And it blew my mind, because that wasn't what I was figuring on. But that's the old days. That's the way they did it. Beat the hell out of you. The interesting thing about that meeting, and I hate to get back on another lead type of thing, my mother-in-law didn't know anything about this, but her insurance man was there. Her boss's husband was there. And there was a little fat priest behind the desk. And I thought, what the hell is that guy doing there? I'm Catholic. You don't have a priest doing this thing. And they did. Father Bob. But that's the way I got started. And eventually, and it didn't take more than a year, maybe 6 months, before Bob and I were able to sit down and have a decent conversation about what was going on in my life. And there was a hell of a lot going on. Wife was threatening this. So many things. I ended up with a psychologist and a psychiatrist, which is another thing that comes up. There's pros and cons on pills and what you should and shouldn't do. But let's not go there. I think I'm pretty well done with what I had in mind. So if there's any questions, well, I am here.
Thank you, Tom. So yeah, if anybody has a question for Tom now, if you're on Zoom, go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up. If you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll get the microphone to you so that you can ask Tom your question. So who wants to get us started off?
I'm Patrick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick.
Thanks, Tom. For me, with regard to our fears and our resentments and evaluating the people we've harmed, I think there's an easy correlation to our drinking. But when it comes to evaluating our sex conduct, I've never really seen the correlation. And I'll take the opportunity, since my sponsor's not here tonight, to say that his response to this question was unsatisfactory to me. So what do you think the authors were thinking, or what are your own thoughts in terms of how our sex conduct correlates with our drinking?
Well, as I told you about the young lady, sex was a big thing for her. Real big. She'd wake up many a morning not knowing where the hell she was at or who she was with, or even if somebody was there. And that, it was kind of a dramatic demonstration to me. My drinking, right now I'm thinking of, I was remodeling a drugstore in Jamestown, New York. And I was up there with, I had carpenters and the like. We had about four motel rooms. And tell you how desperate we were to have a drink. We would take one of those four rooms, go out and get TV dinners, put them on a heater, take the drawers out of the dresser, put it up against that damn heater, and then go out and get smashed and come back and have dinner. And we did that more than once. But what I'm thinking of with that particular incident, and it hasn't got a damn thing to do with sex, but just some of the irrational things I've seen happen. One of the guys was nicknamed Nobby. And one of the other guys, after we drank and had dinner, was horsing around on the mattress. Nobby just took that, he was a big, big man. He took that mattress and flipped it. Poor David went flying in the air and knocked the damn thing off. I had to make excuses for him by knocking the desk off the wall. But I think from what I have seen with people, in particular the women, they have a real hard time because they've done some tough stuff that they don't like to. I don't blame them, you know. But I guess that's where I see the most of it. I guess we guys kind of tend to hide it. But, the one girl I'm speaking of, that was the biggest part of her coming into the program. The very biggest part. Okay?
Thanks.
Sure.
Who else has a question for Tom? Anyone on Zoom?
I have a comment.
Hi, Julie. Oh, Julie! How are you, honey? Good to see you. You're not coming through. Turn something on. Okay. We go way back.
You're muted, Julia.
There you go.
Yeah, you have to unmute yourself, Julia.
Thanks. Thanks. You can see I'm still learning. Anyways, it's good to hear you, Tom, and see you. He practices the principles in all of his affairs. I didn't have money for a bus token coming in, and Tom was practicing those principles and said, you know, you're going to make it. And that's the way he does it. Thanks, Tom. Always good to see you and hear you.
It sure is, Julie. Golly, I think of
you
often. I love you, honey. That's a treat.
Who else has a question for Tom? Kevin's got a question.
He's waiting for you, for God's sake.
Tom, thanks very much for sharing and making. If anybody needs a copy of this, just put it in the chat and I'll make sure that you get it. Those hundred and some questions that you talked about. I think that comes from Hazleton.
Is it Hazleton?
Hazleton makes you.
I don't know. It's on a mimeograph paper,
yeah,
so it's a hundred.
Yeah, so it's an old thing. Yeah, but you know, you got sober was 1974. So I was looking at the sheets. It was dated 1988. So did you have like a formal sit down when you did your fifth step with your sponsor, or did you do it with your sponsor first of all? Because I've heard some people do it with a priest, and you were talking about your Catholicism.
I guess you could say I did it with all three.
Okay.
Between the priest, Bob. Bob was the first mate, and then Jack. The second guy that came along. And they were not, come in, sit down, we're going to do the fifth step. That wasn't the order it fell in. It was more, hey, let's talk a little bit. And we did. It was conversations that just developed out of the circumstances we were in. And I'm very comfortable with doing things that way.
So is that the way that you, when you sponsor somebody, you sit down and have a conversation with them?
Well, I try. I'd rather do it that way if I can. But my memory's so damn short that I got to have something like this to keep me on track.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I end up doing is working with something like that and making it a casual conversation rather than you do this, you do that.
Okay. Another question to follow up on that is when you did your fifth step and you do it with other people, is it, you said it was a more of a formal thing or more of an informal?
More informal.
More informal?
Yeah. Bob and I started out on 10th and East Avenue, that's where he lived. He was single, and the house was a little house on 10th and East Avenue, nothing fancy, nothing. But I said that when we went to meetings, we went out to Albion and those places so that he could have a conversation with me. And then we stayed afterwards at some place, Crossroads Diner in Edinburgh and other places like that, to have a cup of coffee. But when the first time I met Bob was at his home, and I was sober, which I'm very proud of, because I should have been drunk, I think, I don't know, but I promised him I'd stay sober, and I did. But we sat in front of each other, and Bob told me his story. God, he must have talked for an hour, hour and a half. And then he got me going. And that's kind of the way I've developed my approach to things.
Yeah, that's kind of the way Bill and Bob suggested that it would be done also. The other thing is that, you know, you hear people say, well, I've done numerous four steps. Now, I don't know what your experience is on, you know, doing more than one four step, or is it covered more in the 10th step after the four step, or do you feel that maybe you need to go deeper after some time, or do you think it can be handled by the 10th step, or what's your experience with that circle?
Well, it's a good question, because I haven't redone the fourth step. I rely quite a bit on the 10th step, but I have not sat down and redone that with anyone I know. I've had a hiatus here for a while that I wasn't going to meetings, but all that just went out of my head. Not all of it, but a lot of it. And that's not an excuse, it's just the way things happen. When I was with Eckerd Drugs, I travel all over the country. So I'd catch a meeting in Philadelphia, then maybe in Newark or wherever. And it was catch as catch can. But after that, things changed. and I got into another job, and everything went backwards. Didn't go backwards completely. I just wasn't as active as I wanted to be. And of course, they gave me hell. But I didn't. What are you going to do? I didn't do it. Damn it! But we're back on the horse again, and it feels good. It feels real good. As I say, I went to my Wednesday night meeting at the club for ages and ages, and become very much a part of it. Well, the club was closed here for the past what, year or so, and that was a real convenient excuse for me to take it easy. I think I told you I've lost 100 pounds in the past year and a half due to sickness. I feel good with this light weight, but that put me back a little bit when it comes to getting to meetings and being active. And although I did have one guy I was working with, he's dead now, but he came down and tendered me when my wife was out of the house to make sure I didn't fall or something like that. But he was in the fellowship. He was a guy that a priest said, "Would you do this for my friend's mother?" And I went out to a nursing home and found him and talked to him. And it's not the way you'd want to sponsor somebody. They should be coming to you. And the poor guy never did make it all the way. And this was years. We were just talking about another gentleman that we knew. And I could get him sober for a month, two, three, then he'd be off. And I go out to his house, his poor mother, God love her. She weighed 80 pounds, she was a lot. Very old lady. He was living in the basement. And I'm not lying, in 2 days' time, that man went through 6 fits of black velvet. Those bottles were all over, and a lot of human things were all over too. But that's what would happen to him. And he'd go along then, once I get him, I'm not me, the Lord did it, but once he got sober, he'd go off and go to meetings with me, circulate, we'd go to different things. I thought, geez, something's got to click here. And I all of a sudden he'd be gone. And I don't know how many rehabs he went into. This lasted about 8 years. In and out. And I finally said, I've got to be your friend. I can't be your sponsor. He wouldn't let that happen, but I was unsuccessful as far as I was concerned. But that may have been the 1, 2, 3, 4 steps. I don't know. Whatever it was, I wasn't getting through. Yet there are guys like Jack, as we talked earlier, that just can't get it. Just cannot get it. And all you can do is pray for them. So, got it?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.